Hello and welcome to a very special episode of The Laydown. My name is Ryan and I am so delighted to share with you an interview I did last month with horror author Josh Malerman. Josh Malerman is the author of Bird Box, Mallory, Inspection, and more. His latest novel is called Goblin, a novel in 6 novellas, and it's out today. I loved Goblin so much, and I can't wait to hand sell it to all of you. It's one of my favorite books of the year so far, and a must read for every lover of horror. For now, I hope you all enjoy my chat with the incredible Josh Malerman.
Hi, Josh Malerman. How are you?
Excellent. I just rewrote and wrote today. I'm in that part of a new novella, which is that it happens in every writing experience, where I'm like, wait, do I know what I'm doing? And it's like, you have to like, just kind of like bowl through those moments and be like, yeah, of course you do. And then fix whatever that was in the rewrite. Oftentimes those moments end up being the reader's favorite. Where they're like, it's one stretch. And you're like, what, dude? I was like out to sea at that moment. But eyes and fingers and toes crossed that that's what's happening right now.
Ooh, I am excited. Right before we started recording this, I was finishing up Goblin. Oh, it's so good.
Amazing. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love it. So we will talk about Goblin in a second, but I feel like we have to, for my listeners' sake, touch on Bird Box because I feel like that's what you're most well known for at this point. So, and it's funny because I was thinking about Bird Box and I was thinking about, you know, the times of COVID, and I feel like Mallory and the kids would do okay in COVID times.
Yeah, for sure. Mallory was like built for this moment in time. And then obviously I wrote Mallory, the sequel, before COVID, but it came out in July of last year. And there was this one just sort of moment of like, it was almost like a mind screw because I realized that Mallory is super obviously pro mask, right? I mean, that's what she is. That's her whole thing is like, all we need is the blindfold. But the sort of like irony or whatever is that her son, Tom, is he's the more progressive one because what he wants to do is like make a better blindfold, a better eye shield, a better whatever. So in a strange way, Mallory, while being pro-mask, is also the conservative in the book. And it was kind of this like thing that I realized as the book was coming out where I'm like, well, that's weird. She's like, she's our straight and narrow. She's our, this is how it goes, you know?
Yeah.
Right, too. So yeah, I do think Mallory, I wouldn't have made it through Bird Box, the book. I would have been like, you know what? Let's just see. Let's just find out what happens. I can't stay in this house any longer.
Yeah, the curiosity would have killed me. Yeah. I would have been like, but I want to know what it looks like.
Yeah, like, what a way to go. I just want to see it.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, it's so funny because I read Bird Box. Oh gosh, it must have been right after it came out in paperback. One of my coworkers was like, you have to read this. And I've been shoving it at people ever since. Like, no, you have to read this. Then of course the film came out, which was super exciting. What was that process like for you?
Well, in terms of like our involvement in the film, so Bird Box was optioned before it came out. And it was also my first book. So talk about having like literally zero leverage. I mean, I was in the negative in terms of like anyone knowing or name recognition or, but I mean, nothing was out, right? So we understood from the start with Bird Box that like, this is just gonna be theirs and they're gonna do whatever they want with it. That said, they were super warm to us. I was on set. I was flown out to meet the producers. We went to the premieres in LA and in New York. I was on the phone, like, you know, getting updates here and stuff like that, but had no say in the matter, but I felt like that was fine and really fast. So I'm in a band with like my best friends and have been forever, right?
Nice.
And me and another guy, Mark, we write the songs and we don't tell the bass player what to play. We don't tell the drummer what to play. And I feel like I was almost prepped for the Bird Box experience because of that, because I wrote the song Bird Box and then the band, the movie people played it however they wanted. And so I kind of had a sort of, from the word, like sometimes someone will ask, you know, even a friend or whatever, like, are you unhappy with how, what do you mean am I unhappy? It's how they played the song. I don't care, you know? No, I'm not. I'm so happy it happened at all that I don't even care if there's like inconsistencies or I did something different, man. This is the greatest thing ever.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a good way of looking at it. I love that. That's so cool. And I feel like you, you tweeted something the other day about your like theory of momentum. And I feel like that applies to that of like, yes. You kind of start here and it just goes and whatever happens, happens.
I didn't think of that at all when I did that. And you're 100% right. Right. Because the idea there and the idea I try to hold on to is as long as you stay in motion, you're not going to maybe end up where you are hoping to be or plan to be, but you're going to end up somewhere. So take Bird Box, for example, like had I thrown a stick into the wheel, had I been, you know, problematic, had I been difficult, had I, who knows? Like, I doubt that would have changed anything, but maybe. And so instead I'm just like, hey, this is rolling, roll with it. And did it end up exactly how I imagined? Of course not. You think I imagined Sandra Bullock playing Mallory? You know what I mean? Like, no. So, but you, it ended up somewhere. And that the trip of getting from here to there, you know, people always say the journey is the real part and you're like, okay. But like, yeah, it kind of is. And it kind of was for that too, where at the end, like, yes, I love the movie, but it was more like this whole experience of this happening. And then it makes you want to write another book and makes you want to write another book. So it all sort of starts to feed on itself.
Ah, that's awesome. Yeah. For what it's worth, I love both the book and the film separately and together. Which I think is how it should be. But all right, we're here to talk about Goblin. This podcast will go up on release day. So congrats on Goblin.
Thank you so much. Yeah, Goblin is it's got a special place in my heart because I didn't really know what I was doing at first when I started it. You know what I mean by that? Mm-hmm. Like I'm going to write 6 novellas and it's going to be in one. You just kind of start writing one and then you're like, oh, there's a whole city here. There's a whole, you know, mm-hmm. And I had a weird experience where, and I almost am hesitant to tell you this cause it's embarrassing, where I was originally calling the town Rolling Hills.
So bad.
And the whole time I'm writing, I'm like, Rolling Hills Police, the Rolling Hills. And I'm like, Rolling Hills? It sounds like a subdivision. Like Rolling Hills of Michigan or something. What am I talking about? And I don't remember exactly what it was. A friend used like the word goblin like someone normally would. I don't know how someone normally would.
Just in normal conversation. Sure. Normal conversation.
And it leapt out at me in like marquee lights. Like, that's your city, man. Nice. And I was like, that's it, Goblin. And she was like, what are you? And I'm like, that's it. That's the city. Screw Rolling Hills. It's called Goblin. I mean, I'm talking like page 5, you know what I mean? I'm talking way early into this. But once that came to be, once I had the name of this town that to me fit this feeling of this town that I had, it was like, oh my God, this is an endless playground now. Now I could have anything. We could be talking about Goblin Games, the Goblin Police, like people that visit Goblin, weddings, the Woodruff, how the cemetery is different, the actual streets, the thoroughfares, the people that visit, the, you know, the lifelong Gobliners who, yes, love being there, despite, like, Walter Camp is a Gobliner and probably should have got out of town or should get out of town, but he, you know, he's a lifer. And so, mm-hmm, like him versus someone who's visiting and that, mm-hmm, kind of thing. And I was like, yeah, this is an endless playground now. Mm.
I love Goblin is my favorite character in Goblin.
Amazing.
Oh my God. I mean, the fact that it's basically always raining. And it has this like green tinge to it. Like everything in Goblin is green, which it delights me every time you write green Goblin, just utter delight. This like, you know, forbidden forest, there's a street called Christmas. Like, I love everything about Goblin. It's the best.
I'm thank you for saying that about it being your favorite character, because I guess that's actually articulating it in a better way than I just said it. That's really what happened. Once I got that name, and again, it lined up with how I felt, it was like, no, you didn't have the town, you had your character now. Mm. And under the umbrella of this character, anything goes. I mean, think about it. Goblins, like, one night, one, you know, yeah. I mean, like, and how many other people are there to write about? You know, sometimes someone would be like, you're going to write a second book to this. And usually I'd be like, oh, we'll see. But right now I'm kind of like, yeah, I want to. Mm-hmm. I want to visit this place again. I want to see what six more people are doing in this place.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you could have just a huge series of Goblin, just like random nights in Goblin. What's going down?
Yes. Love it. Totally.
Yeah, I would read the crap out of that. I can't get enough of the six novellas you've given us. Like, I want more. I was describing them to my husband last night, who, he's so funny. He was like, talking about how he always forgets how much he loves reading horror until he's reading horror. And I was like, ooh, and I started describing the six novellas of Goblin, and he was riveted just from my little elevator pitches. And I was like, oh, you're gonna love this.
That's funny. I know what he means. I'm sure everyone does, and you do too. Like that happens to me, like, let's say with like certain kinds of music or something, where I'm like, I haven't listened to Pink Floyd or metal or whatever it is. And then you put it on, you're like, oh man, I could listen to this all day, you know. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it just kind of takes like falling into it. So here's your husband's like he forgets how much he loves experiencing horror until he's in it. I know that in a different way. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I'm curious. So obviously, writing a series of novellas is different from writing a novel. Which do you prefer? Do you have a preference, or are they just so different that it doesn't even matter?
It's interesting that you bring that up, because I've been thinking about it lately. So I had failed to write my first four books, and all I mean by failed is didn't finish, right? Mm-hmm. And then the first one I finished, when I really think about it, it's more a collection of short stories in a sense, because it's two characters doing research about this place in town, and they interview a bunch of different people, and those people tell them their story about this place. So in a sense, when I finished it, it struck me like that was more collection than it was novel, even though it's totally a novel. And Goblin is, and to me, there's a ton of energy in that first book, and Goblin is the same thing. Yeah. And there's a ton of, or I wouldn't say a ton of energy, whatever, I'm just happy with Goblin. So the point is, I actually feel like I prefer it this way. And I'm working on a collection of novellas right now, and it does seem more, like, at home for me. It does seem more home for me to be working from this rather than trying to sustain, you know, a narrative for an entire novel and then running into what are sometimes typically like the arcs, like, oh, well, now you need something big to happen here or this or that. In the novella format, some of those rules, you seem to shed some of those rules.
Yeah.
And if it's almost like a way of skirting the rules is a collection of novellas versus a whole book. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's really cool. I really love the novella format. I feel like I am reading, like, I feel like I read Goblin so much faster than I read a typical novel, because they're shorter, but they're all connected. And I'm like, how is this one going to connect to that one? And like finding the little threads that do connect them is very fun. And it's a very cool format.
I agree. And also in horror, to me, like, like the scariest horror story I ever hear is like a friend who, you know, or a stranger, whatever. Let's say we're at a house party, mm-hmm. and I'm out on the front porch for a second, and some guy comes out and he says, oh, you write horror? And I'm like, yeah. And then he goes, man, one time I was in the basement and I saw my dead aunt peer on the furnace and like wink at me. And I'd be like, what? And then he's like, I gotta go back inside. That two sentence or one sentence would be the scariest story I'd ever heard.
Yeah.
And so then that's literally the shortest, it was one sentence long. Now, how do we keep what he gave me for the duration of a short story? How do we keep what he gave me for the duration of a short story? But now I want to get to know the characters better. Well, that's the novella. Mm-hmm. The novella is like, and whereas the novel, most novels, it's hard. You know, I mean, everyone knows it's hard to maintain that mood for the duration of an entire novel. Even Stephen King novels, like at some point there's either like something funny or something, or there's a bigger cast of characters. It goes somewhere else. But to maintain that actual mood that guy said in this fictional moment on this front porch at this fictional party, the novella seems perfect.
Yeah.
Between sustaining that mood and being able to still give like a whole world of a story to get into.
Yeah, 100%. It's funny reading the different novellas in Goblin. I would find myself at times like forgetting for just a second that I was reading horror. I would just sort of like be like, you know, all right, I'm reading about this character. And then I would remember and like the dread would set in and it'd be like, oh no, what's about to happen?
Yeah. So you're on a conveyor belt.
Yeah. It was like with Camp, like Walter Camp, I'm like just fascinated by the history of Goblin. And then I'm like, oh wait.
You know, I don't know if it's uncouth for an author to say this kind of thing, but he's my favorite. Why? Because his story is probably the least, you know, action-packed or something, right? But at least like eventful in a sense. But he is the ultimate gobliner. Like yeah. He really is. He's like, like horrified of it and in love with it and attached to it and welded to it and knows everything about it and doesn't want to know anything about it. And is scared out of his mind. But at the same time, I don't think that guy wants to live anywhere else.
No way. He could never leave.
I don't even think he could like survive somewhere else.
No. He'd get like 1 foot out of the city limits and just explode. Like he couldn't. Yeah, he couldn't do it.
He would literally explode.
He'd literally explode.
For me, from the word go with him, and I think it makes sense that his story came somewhat early. Because as a writer, it was sort of like, if you think about it, in the first story, Richard and Charles walk around sort of like, so you get to know the town as their first, like, over here is this, and over here is this. But the second story, Camp, is where you get to know the people. Mm-hmm. And I think I needed that early character that established for me, like, this is sort of a template of how bizarre a gobliner is.
Yes.
So Camp went a long way for me.
Yes. Yeah, no. And the way that like the order of the novellas is so perfect. Like the way they build on each other, right? Because you're right. It's like it starts out and it's like, all right, like here's like the layout of Goblin. And then it's like, okay, here's some of the history of Goblin. And then the next one like takes some of that history and like uses that in the, like it just builds and builds and builds. And
right, because the this is interesting. Now you're going to hear me saying all this in interviews as if I knew this, but I didn't. And then the third one is some more history, but about the owls and the Forbidden Woods and also breaking those rules and wanting to break those rules. So now you're getting Camp, who was like, you know, a slave to those rules, versus Neil Nash, who's like, I'm going to break these rules and make my own. Mm-hmm. And they're both equally gobliners. And then you get a visitor, the goblin, like an outsider in Roman Emperor and Presto. Mm-hmm. And then I think that my personal opinion is the most tragic story in Goblin is A Mix of At the Zoo. Dirk Rogers is just a mess, man. And like, he just needed someone to like step in and like, hey man, like everything's cool and this is how it is. And like, you're all right, Dirk. Hey man, let's go to a beach for a week, you know? Like he just needed a friend or something and he didn't know what he was, you know? So he to me, he's sort of like the underbelly, like the tragedy of that, what that town can do to you, more so than Camp is or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt really bad for Dirk.
Yeah. The whole time I was writing it, I did. I'm like, oh God, can't we give this guy like a one good night out or something?
Well. Try. Yeah. I was trying to think if I had a favorite novella and I kept just coming back to you. My favorite was whatever one I was on at the time was my favorite at the time. I was like, this is the best one. And then I'd read the next one. I'd be like, no, this is the best one. Right. And then I'd start describing them and I'd be like, oh no, wait, that one was the best. You know, I was just, they're all amazing. But the one that I keep the imagery of Happy Birthday Hunter with Neil Nash just really stuck with me of this guy. He's almost, I got like a little bit of like Gatsby vibes from him,
yeah, sure.
Of like at his party. And he's just like not engaging with the party necessarily. He's like got his own thing that he's got to deal with.
Yeah. And he's like a myth at his own party.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And it's like complete decadence and complete like, you could argue amoral decadence depending on how you live your life, I suppose, but I think I would consider it amoral decadence. That guy's like a monster, but I don't know, at the same time, like it's almost like he's the other side of that Camp coin, where if I lived in Goblin for that long, I might want to be like F the rules and try to live as gregariously and huge and fearlessly as Neonash tries to live.
Oh yeah. If you tell me I can't go into a forest because there's a right. witch that eats people, like I'm going in that forest. Right. I can't exactly. help myself.
somebody in town's got to, like, that's what he's thinking, right? Somebody's doing this and it's going to be me. Right.
Yeah.
Totally.
Oh man. God, what a great story. So Goblin is, as I mentioned earlier, it's a character unto itself, not unlike a sort of like a Derrymane in a Stephen King novel. And I was wondering, like, who are some of your like horror influences? And did you kind of like set out to, I guess you sort of answered this a little bit, to set out to make Goblin a character, or did that just happen?
Yes, I mean, I hope that doesn't remove some mystery from an author or writer standpoint. But once I understood, like I said, once I met Goblin or something, then it was like, you're my main character. And, yeah. and everyone else is like inside you. Kind of like the Twilight Zone is the main character. Well, yeah. but it's even stranger in that show, right? Because that's not even a concrete singular location. There are no right. there are no longitude and latitude to find the Twilight Zone, right? So,
yeah.
but in a sense, that's like what I was weaned on. Not mm-hmm. that I grew up in that era, obviously. But my first scary movie I ever saw was Twilight Zone, the movie in 83 or whatever, 85. And so I've definitely always been interested in this idea of a quote unquote place you could go that is just, it's just another world or whatever, but it still somewhat resembles this one. And mm-hmm. I don't want to suggest that Goblin is a physical location of the Twilight Zone. It's not that, because it's not. It's more like the fierce loyalty of locals and like, why do I still live here? But in like exaggerated like a thousandfold.
Yeah.
And like the sense of, and I think that I too would, I mean, if you grew up in Goblin, it'd be really hard to live somewhere else, I feel like. Because
yeah.
even if Goblin has this like really eerie undertone to someone who lives there, I think you'd miss that.
Mm-hmm.
And so Winesburg, Ohio is one with this guy, Sherwood Anderson, you know that book?
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Okay, so that's not horror, but you know, that's why I was like, wasn't yeah. sure if it was a good answer or not, but it's not horror, but still it was, here's the town and here's each of character in that book. It's like characters that are dealing with like the loneliness of small town life, the like small town life, that kind of thing. So it's nothing mm-hmm. like that, but still it's really Winesburg is the centerpiece, and these right. characters all feel similar or are affected by it. So I would yeah. say something like that had a greater impact than even Derry and yeah. Twilight Zone or something like that.
That's really cool. Yeah, that's God, it's been so long since I read Winesburg, Ohio, but yeah, you're 100% right. That's a really good comparison. You're obviously writing, you're working on more novellas, but what else is next for you? Do you have virtual tours coming up? Do you have like, how are you celebrating Goblin?
Well, I am trying to set up like stuff like that, like you're saying, like events and stuff, mm-hmm. but also a number of interviews. And I may be leaving town for the first time in a year, obviously, or more than a year, wow. right? When like the day after Saint Goblin comes out, it may be the moment of like, okay, because Allison's my fiance. We've been here for, you know, it's easy to adjust like the lockdown life when you're writing novels and don't mm-hmm. have kids, right?
Right?
So there was literally never like a real reason to leave the house. It would right. have to be like, dude, you should leave. Like you should go drive around, you should do this. And it almost feels like we both got vaccinated and Goblin's coming out. And there's a sense of, you know what, this is that moment. Let's go somewhere. So I think we may leave. But between now and then, yeah, interviews. And I'm gonna try to make some sort of video. We did, oh God, I gotta send you these photos. I will. We did, so we do like theatrical readings of every book, right?
Amazing.
Like full on set design, costumes. I play scary music. Allison played like Mallory and this kind of thing.
Oh my God.
Allison made costumes like for Walter Camp, for the Owls. I played Wayne Sherman in the thing. That sounds like hilarious in now, but I did. I got to send you the photos of Allison as Walter Camp. It's going to blow your lid. She had the plexiglass bed.
Oh my God.
And like with like, you know, with like the slats of like light from like an open door down the hall or whatever. Well, you know what I mean? From like the window,
yeah, yeah.
like on him. And she was like this big suit that she wore. And she just looked like a, I mean, it couldn't be better. I gotta send you those.
Oh, photos. Please do.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. That sounds incredible. Oh my God. That's so cool. I love that you do that though. I love that you do these like dramatic readings. That's so cool.
Well, when Bird Box first came out, this is where it all started real fast, is that the publishing house said, you know, for all of our authors that are even remotely musical, could you like make like an audio recording of you playing an instrument and maybe talking about your book or reading? And I was like, that sounds weird. What am I doing? Like the Ballad of Bird Box, like just strum in A minor. So I was like, how about if I play like scary music and we act a scene out, like kind of a radio play, whatever.
Yeah.
And they were like, yes, that sounds great. So we did that. But then what struck me is, Allison, we could do this same exact thing live by just blindfolding the audience. Right? And so Allison and I toured around the Midwest with a suitcase full of blindfolds. This is in 2014. And like this organ that played like music while she played Mallory and I narrated. And we drove all these libraries and bookstores and all this stuff. And then when the second book came out, it was like, well, now we can't just have me at a podium. We gotta find out. So it has become full costumes, set design, friends playing instruments, crowd, you know, like blindfolding crowd or whatever, like crowd involvement in certain ways, renting out bars, renting out Masonic temples, renting out theaters, that kind of stuff. So what I would love to do for Goblin is what we're describing right now, like another thing like that. I don't think we're quite there yet. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. So
I think I'm gonna have to settle with virtual stuff, but I would like to make some sort of video for that. And that was a really long answer for your question.
No, I'm obsessed. Maybe when it comes out in paperback, it'll be
okay. Yeah, no, that's
you can do the paperback tour.
That was a very optimistic. That thank you for saying that. I started getting nervous. You could probably tell you like it's okay, dude.
No, I'm obsessed, and I demand that you come to Gibson's and you do this.
Oh, I'd love to. Oh my gosh, it was amazing. Again, to like pull into this town, and there was one time at a bookstore in either Cincinnati, I think it was Cincinnati, I'll ask Allison, but where the bookstore owner pulled us aside first because there was a cafe there. And they're like, hi, so we hear that you do like a theatrical thing. And we're like, yeah. And they're like, well, okay, that's good. But we heard that like in the course of your show, the lady like screams like at the top of her lungs, like bloody murder. And we're like, yeah. And they're like, could you maybe not do that part today? And we were like, wow, the word's getting around about this thing that we're doing, you know? And then I, not in a punkish way, but I was like, no, that's gotta stay.
Yeah.
That's literally the whole peak of the horror show. That's, I mean, Allison's gonna scream her head off, you know?
Yeah.
And like Allison is like a classical like singer and stuff.
Oh,
and she
amazing.
Can belt. So this scream is like, every time she did it, I would, you know, everyone else would be blindfolded and I'd be like, oh boy, here we go.
Oh my gosh. I'm like, my whole body, I'm just one tense little ball. I'm so excited. This is amazing.
Yeah, it was. I do miss that right now, especially now that we're talking about it so much. Hey, I just wanted to show you real fast. This is just, I guess. That's the original cover for a limited edition.
Cool.
That Allison made. And I don't know if you can like fully see it, but it seems a little dark right now. But these are the topiaries.
Yeah.
And the truck entering Goblin and it's
yes.
Raining.
Okay, yep.
There's all these like faces like crying in the clouds.
Oh,
and I mean,
God. It,
yeah, here's the key to the city on the back. Like, this is amazing. This is truly, Allison did this all with lettering and everything by hand.
Stop like, it. That's incredible.
I know. It's totally awesome. I know.
God, that's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, she is amazing. And she's like an incredible sort of partner in crime to have in these theatrical experiences. Like, she, you know, someone that can build sets and act and sing and scream. And
you know. Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm telling you, as soon as it's safe, you guys got to come to Gibson's and do the whole thing. I need to see it. I need to experience it.
I love it. Okay.
Oh my God. Before I let you go, is there anything you've been reading recently that you feel like recommending?
Yeah, I just read this one, Come With Me by Ronald Malfi.
Ooh.
Do you know Ronald Malfi?
I do. Yeah, okay, I haven't read that one yet.
It's so good. I honestly can't believe it. And I've been like writing him about it. Like the narrative voice is one of the most like in control I think I've ever read in my life.
Wow.
And I like compare it to like Algernon Blackwood in a blurb I wrote for it recently. I was like, Ronald, this is like, it just, it's one of those moments where, you know, when some books you read for the ideas, some you read for the energy, some you read for the plot, whatever it is. But this one is like a sense where like he could, this voice he's using, you know, he could say anything and you'd be like, wow, okay, okay, well, oh, wow, tell me more. It's just, he's in full control of this story and I absolutely love it. Come with me, Ronald Malfi, yeah.
Amazing, I can't wait to pick that one up. That just like jumped up my TBR.
Oh, no, I just, you know, he was, would you mind blurbing or whatever? I'm like, yeah, sure, you know? And then I start reading and right away I was like, oh, wow, yeah, this is a special one. You can like tell right away.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
Yeah, me too.
Awesome. Well, I think that's all I have for you. If I keep you any longer, I'm just going to keep screaming at you about how much I love your books. So, and I'm sure you have other things you need to do today. Oh. but if you ever need an ego boost, you know where to find me. Awesome. Josh Malerman, thank you so much for hanging out on the podcast. Congrats on Goblin. Oh, I can't wait to hand sell the crap out of it. It's incredible.
Listen, thank you so much for reading our number one and for having me. I just want to say in the event, and I doubt you ever deal with anyone who's ungrateful, but I am absolutely grateful that you asked for this and that we did this. So thank you very much.
Yeah, of course. Are you kidding? I was like, what? Yes, obviously. and I look forward to eventually you coming to the bookstore and doing an amazing live event.
I love it. Okay.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Good luck with virtual tour and interviews and all of that.
All right. Yeah. Whatever. We'll see each other online or whatever it may be. And you'll see, you'll be like, hopefully you'll see like, we're doing like some stadium theatrical reading.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing.
I look forward to it. All right. Josh, you have an awesome day.
You too. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Huge thanks to Josh Malerman for chatting with me. Goblin is on our shelves now, and you should all go buy it immediately. Links are in the show notes. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com, and we're also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and we'll put those links in the show notes along with all of the books that were mentioned during this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks. Bye!